Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
720 WGN and a happy Thursday afternoon to you, everybody. John Hansen filling in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. You heard some of those voices. We're going to hear from Dennis Rodkin from Cranes. We got Bill Geiger as well coming in, and Ian Schur, the executive editor at CNET, coming on in just a moment. That's what's coming up in the next 60 minutes, brought to you in part by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Let's jump right into it with Ian Schur from CNET. And Ian, thanks so much for joining me on this Thursday afternoon.
My pleasure. How you doing?
Doing very well, and I appreciate you coming in, even though Steve's out for today. Let's jump right in with this talk about Apple's announcements yesterday. We don't have time to run through all of the announcements that they made, but what were maybe one or two of the surprising, the headliners, the things that you're excited about as you hear from Apple?
You know, I was really fascinated by the fact that there are three new iPhones that Apple announced. It used to be there was only one.
Right.
And last year, they announced two, which was a big deal. They announced the iPhone 8, and then they announced the iPhone 10, which was the first device that Apple sold above $1,000 for a phone. And it was a little unusual, right? A lot of people were sitting there thinking, I remember last year, a lot of people were like, can Apple really get away with selling a $1,000 phone? That seems like it might be too much. And of course, over the last year, if you've been keeping track of what's been going on at Apple, it's been going bananas. It's been the best-selling phone for them the whole time. So now, this year, we've got the new iPhone XS, right, which is the upgrade from last year. It's still $1,000. The iPhone XR, which is a lower-end version, has a lower-quality screen and a lower-quality camera, but otherwise, it's pretty much the same. That's $749. Which, by the way, is $100 more than the $650 people were used to paying for
right.
the phone. And then there's the $1099 iPhone XS Max. It's larger than the iPhone XS, and it is $100 more than the highest-end iPhone last year. So now we are at this point where Apple is pushing the boundaries even further. And this matters because the rest of the industry has followed suit like crazy. We had seen that did an analysis of all the phones that are out there, the high-end smartphones. The average prices rose some 30%
wow.
in the last year because everyone was following Apple's lead.
Well, and so
now the question is, can you sell even more?
Well, and that's right. And I feel like you need a decoder ring to get through these X's and these 10s and the SRs and all this sort of thing. But, you know, I mean, honestly, I bought a new iPhone 8 last year. I was shocked at how much it was. But I put it on a plan, and the carrier divided the cost over the 2 years, and you just kind of swallow that pill.
Well, part of the pill also is that we in America have been really spoiled by the way that things were done before. You may remember, 10 years ago, if you bought a phone, it was like only $100 or $200
right.
or even free, right? But it was actually factored into the cost of your data plan. So you were paying that much, but it was split up over time, and, you didn't see the cost. Now, everything's kind of out in the open, right? Their full costs are there. And you're basically paying for the phone directly. So it's been a little weird because there was definitely a lot of pushback from people who were buying phones. They're like, wait a minute, why did prices suddenly go up $700? But of course they haven't, right? We've always been paying that much. We just didn't know it before.
Exactly. And I got to say, I haven't bought a new laptop in 6 or 7 years. My iPhone 8 does well enough. So I guess maybe it is worth the cost. Okay, we got to transition into talking about 5G. A number that didn't even seem possible, 10 or 15 years ago, and now we're at 5G. Verizon going to be offering it for home use, but there's a catch. It's only in certain cities. Walk us through what the difference between 4G and 5G is going to be.
Right, so it's not just another G. That's the important part. It actually, one of the big things about this is that it's going to be extremely fast. It's going to be way faster than what we've been dealing with 4G. And here's the other thing, is that it's so much more efficient. So what's going to happen is that cars are going to be...
Oh, looks like we lost Ian Schur there. Unfortunately, Ian, you there by any chance? Oh, we lost Ian, but he was going to be talking about how certain cars and the self-driving cars, they need that 5G technology in order to make it work. Always appreciate when Ian Schur, the executive editor at CNET, comes on. Oh, Ian, you there? I think we lost you there for a moment. You were saying about cars, right?
Yeah, so cars can do it, and then medical devices and all sorts of other stuff, right? So one of the things that Verizon announced on Tuesday is that they are going to start offering this in homes, because the other thing it's going to do is it's going to replace the modems we all have in our homes, which is really interesting, right? You have, right now we all have phone lines we rely on or cable. That's going to go away. And what's going to happen is that we're going to have much better quality internet, especially people in rural areas, who are going to be able to use the wireless instead. So they're testing this now in Indianapolis, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Eventually, it's going to roll out all over the place. And, you know, people like me in an apartment building with really bad phone lines that are over 100 years old in the building, I'm going to be able to have fast internet finally. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out.
Ian, I got to say, people roll their eyes at these extra Gs and the new technology. But as you mentioned, the rural areas, other areas, low-income folks, it is a great equalizer in many ways. Ian, I know we got stories that we have piled up we're not going to be able to talk about. Where can people find out more information about these stories?
Of course, everything's at CNET.com. You can always go there. And then I'm on Twitter at Ian Scherr. That's S-H-E-R-R.
Ian, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
720 WGN, John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. Always look forward to our regular conversations with Bill Geiger, and our conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Bill, thanks so much for joining us here today.
John, it's good to be with you again, sir.
I read about this wonderful, luxurious vacation you can take, and I imagine as people look forward to retirement, they can't wait to soak up the beach, but there's a lot of, you know, problems and things they need to start taking care of and worrying about. Let's start with pensions here in Illinois, because a lot of retirees are expecting their pensions, of course. But we got to talk about situations in which that may not be such a good thing.
Well, John, we were talking before we went on the air about the difference between a tornado and a hurricane.
Yeah.
Right? It can be a beautiful day in the Midwest, and all of a sudden a hurricane pops up out of nowhere.
A tornado pops up
out of nowhere. On the other hand, a hurricane like Francis, we see it coming, we talk about it. And if you're still sitting in your house on the beach, that's not good.
So you're saying, like, when we watch the news and we see those people that unfortunately stuck around, and even though they were told to get out, and we kind of roll our eyes at them, that's what we're going to be doing financially to people that don't look at this hurricane that's coming at them.
You know it's coming.
So what is the hurricane? Are you talking about the end of the bull market, pension problems?
Well, I'm talking about underfunding of pension plans.
Uh-huh.
In Illinois, for every dollar that supposed to be in a pension plan to fund the future promises, they have 39 cents.
Wow.
Okay. And that's not going away.
Right.
The same thing is an issue with underfunded corporations' pensions plans. If you know, we're talking about this too. If you have a pension plan,
mm-hmm.
you've got to depend upon your employer to make great financial decisions for the next 20 to 30 years, your ex-employer,
mm-hmm.
right? If you have the option to take a lump sum, that means they give you a big chunk of money up front rather than taking that pension. And we do this all the time. We take that money and create private pension plans for
right.
our clients.
You take onus and you take responsibility of that money, and you know what you can do with it.
You know what you can do with it. You've got control over it. And the difference between that, again, and a regular pension plan is a regular pension plan, when you and your wife are gone, that money's gone.
Right.
But if you've taken your lump sum and created your own pension plan, you've got money that you can leave to your kids.
Almost like a legacy.
Yeah. So all those years that you worked to have that benefit, you can pass that on to your kids as a legacy.
Yeah, that's
a big deal.
That is the huge difference. And I think what's interesting you mentioned there is, as we look at pensions being insolvent and we worry about them, some people that are close to retirement might think, well, you know, I've only got 5 or 6 years till I retire. It'll be okay till then. But you're not talking about till just the day you retire.
No, you're talking about
30 years afterwards.
20 or 30 years down the road.
Right.
And if you think about it, what's the probability that you're going to be able to enjoy your pension as it is now in these underfunded plans for the next 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
Very low.
Very low. And when you talk about taking that lump sum, obviously then that's a big chunk of change. Hopefully
yes.
that's good news.
That's good news.
Then I wonder, the question is, well, what do you do with it? I mean, that's where you want to build this legacy for the next generation. You know, how are we going to make that become this legacy payment?
We do that all the time. We've got strategies that will take that money and create just a ton of dependable, sustainable income that people can count on
mm-hmm.
for the rest of their lives. Big difference. I mean, the happiest people that ever come into my office, know how they're going to be paying their bills for the rest of their life. And it just makes all the difference in the world. If you've got dependable, sustainable income coming in every month you can count on, you're a happy camper.
Yeah, no, exactly. You're on the beach, as we were saying.
Yeah,
but not in the way of the hurricane, of course.
No.
Bill, it's always great to chat with you. Thank you so much for stopping on by today. WGN, John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank on 720 WGN. Always a pleasure to see Dennis Rodkin, the real estate reporter at Cranes. Dennis, I hope you know your title better than I do.
Real estate. I say it every day.
Real estate reporter. Yeah. Yes, that's what's throwing me off. Let's talk about the mortgages here in the Chicago area, and it's a trend that's also expanding nationwide. And I tee this up by saying that in quarter two 2018, I bought my first place. Our producer, Bennett Wakenight, bought his first place. And we were really trying to push these numbers up, but apparently we were some of the few people that bought mortgages.
You may have been the only one. So the one thing to be clear on this is all types of mortgages.
Okay.
Purchase mortgages have been sort of cranking along. They're not, the number of those was not super high in the second quarter, but it wasn't
historically low or something along those
lines. The real historical low is in refinancing, and when you're looking at all types, purchase, refinance, and home equity loan, refinance really set back both Chicago, not only Chicago, but four other major cities. We're taking out fewer mortgages than we were at any time in the past 16 years. And, of course, 16 years takes us back to 2002, which is
well before
the run-up and before the crash. Yeah, and so the other cities are New York, Dallas, Washington, and Philadelphia, the other four of the top 10 cities, and then Chicago makes five, where we are taking out fewer mortgages than we were any time in the last 16 years. And the primary reason here, I can't speak to those other cities as much, is that our home values aren't going up all that fast, but but interest rates are.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes less and less. Not only is there not as much reason to refinance because almost everybody who could
did it already.
When rates were really low. But if you didn't, or if any of your other conditions have changed, the problem is you're not gaining so much home equity that refinancing really makes a lot of sense.
It's not worth it anymore.
Yeah. So and if there aren't mortgages being taken out, of course, that the multiplier effect of taking out a mortgage is not running through the economy.
Well, especially for purchasing new homes, certainly.
Purchasing, but also refinancing. Yeah, you know, I mean, often if I refinance, suddenly my household budget has $100, $200, $500 a month in it that it didn't have, and I'm more likely to get the couch I hadn't been getting or go on a nicer vacation, that kind of thing. And if I can't refinance, then my budget doesn't get that leeway in it. So this is not just a measure of what homeowners are buying or not buying. It's in terms of houses. It's also whether there's money coursing through the economy.
I want to talk about that purchasing one, which, as you said, it's not at a historically low level or anything along those lines. It is low. And when you look at the every other number in the economy, we're feeling great about it. Is it worry of what might be on the horizon? Is it that inventory low? Is it that millennials, you know, they prefer renting? Is it a combination of all those?
It's a lot of those, yeah. So what the analysts told me is, first of all, again, our market is not going up that fast. So people aren't buying because it doesn't seem like a great investment. Our home values are rising fast in lakefront neighborhoods and some affluent suburbs, but not many. Generally, our home values are rising very slowly. So if I'm a millennial, I may decide to keep renting. If I'm somebody who's already in a house, I'm not likely to move up to another because I just don't want to take that risk. But also there's this question, an economist who studies Illinois said that there are a lot of people who feel that short term the economy is doing really well, the stock market's running up and that sort of thing, but long term, because of the tariff wars and other things, they're concerned that it's not sustainable. I shouldn't say only tariff wars, but the pension problems in Illinois, it's not
just
sustainable.
General uncertainty, exactly.
Yeah, general uncertainty. So should I take on either a big new investment or a new, larger investment that I'm already living in. And generally, many people are deciding, no, I'm not going to do it.
This is probably more of a macro question, but just hypothesizing here. The idea that if people are a little bit more hesitant, maybe that's not, on the grand scheme of things, the worst thing in the world. I mean, as long as we still see homes going being bought, I know that's not great for real estate agents,
right.
But I think that a little trepidation might be a well-learned lesson from 2007, 2008.
You know, I've been covering real estate since for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 1990s, what people always said is the great thing about Chicago is we still have our Midwestern conservatism. We're much more skeptical. Our prices don't run up as much as they do on the coasts, and therefore they don't fall as much as they do on the coasts. In the early 21st century, that started to change.
Mm-hmm.
We acted like all the other cities, and we went nuts with our prices, perhaps not as nuts as San Francisco, those
right.
kinds of things. So if our old Midwestern conservatism is coming back, you're right. That's not necessarily a bad thing. If I'm not committing to an unsustainable investment, it doesn't mean I'm withdrawing from the economy entirely.
Right.
It just means I'm being prudent, which is fine.
That's good, because earlier in your conversation, my palms were starting to sweat, and Bennett was applying for a second and third job really quickly because we just bought. Let's shift gears, but still talking about real estate. Barrington, as an isolated suburb, is having some issues in terms of the home values there and the amount of purchasing that's going on. Dive into that a little bit deeper. Is that a problem just for Barrington? Is it the surrounding communities? Is this a general suburban problem?
Well, all of the outlying suburbs. I mean, the story I did on Barrington this week, I've also done a version of on Burr Ridge, on Lake Forest. All the outlying suburbs have been having trouble, in part because a lot of the attention is turning back toward the city. All of those are places where empty nesters once might have bought a bigger estate or, you know, and got more horses or something like that. Those people now would be moving down here, downtown, getting a penthouse, a townhouse, whatever they can afford. And I mean, I'm speaking very broadly. Of
mm-hmm.
course, there are still people who want a bigger horse property, but
right.
more of the attention has turned toward downtown, not only with empty nesters, but at every level, every age group, more people are living, and by downtown, I mean sort of the closer
the broadly,
to the core
yes,
than you were.
Yes.
So all the outlying suburbs are having trouble. I see almost every day a property on the North Shore, in the southwest suburbs, in St. Charles, in Barrington, that has sold for less than a 2004 price, a 2002 price, because they're having trouble attracting buyers. That doesn't mean there aren't sales.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that nobody wants to live there, but it's just harder to get a buyer. In the Barrington area this year is where I'm seeing the most weakness. They had a pretty good year in 2017, but so far in 2018, prices and sales are down in the double digits, more than 10% each. Both sales, the number of sales is down, and the median price is down more than 10%, which is a harder hit than any other affluent suburb.
Could any of this be attributed to the fact that we've had some of these big businesses moving from the northern suburbs to downtown? I mean,
yeah, well, and in their case, from the northwest suburbs. I mean, once upon a time, Sears moved out to the northwest suburbs and had this enormous employment cluster,
mm-hmm.
and that has shriveled, and Ameritech has left out there, and others have left the northwest suburbs and moved down to, well, Sears hasn't moved downtown, but
right.
has shrunk. Others have moved downtown. Motorola has. Yes, that has a lot to do with it. And again, that's affecting lots of places. The next one we're going to be watching is Takeda has just announced its closing in Deerfield, and that means 1,000 jobs that will no longer be in Deerfield.
And that changes a lot. Dennis, I got to say, when you mentioned that you wrote about similar stories in Burr Ridge and some of the other suburbs, I know you don't do this, but I hope that you just have your Word document open and you just find and replace the suburbs' names and you flip them out and then you send it in for new copy.
That's how I do my job, you bet.
That's
where
efficiency.
Do I not like today?
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. No, obviously you do much more than that. And you're going to stick around and talk to us about what gentleman farms are, because I have no idea what they are, okay?
Oh, okay.
Quickly after this, a quick commercial break here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day.
Hey there, all right, boys, back that moving truck on up, and everything must go.
That might be the scene at the Forever 21 and Tommy Bahama Mag Mile locations, as they're moving on out. The two stores announced that they're leaving their Michigan Avenue location, and they're two very different spaces. But the perk of the Forever 21 location is the second floor space. In the retail industry, it's generally known that the second floor of a store is the neglected part, so there's a handful of office tenants that are looking to snag the spot, like co-working companies, Northwestern Medicine, and others. Who wouldn't want to work on the Mag Mile? Coming from experience, it's pretty cool. Just ask Impact Networking as they're moving on into the Mag Mile at 150 North Michigan Ave, and they're hiring 50 new employees. The IT and business services company is outgrowing its space, and with an average growth rate of 27% for the last 18 years, I think they're moving in the right direction. Let's see how long it takes for them to grow out of this spot. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand, sitting next to Dennis Rockin, covering real estate at Crane's. And I've been teasing this all show long. A gentleman's farm, an old gentleman's farm, is being transformed. And I have to ask you, Dennis, what is a... Because I have these images of what a gentleman's farm might be.
You thought a gentleman's farm might be a gentleman's club in the country or
right,
something
yes,
like
you
that?
Yes, you just walk through the corn stalks or something. I don't know if they... If scantily clad dressed women came out of the soybean field. I don't know exactly what it is. It's not.
I don't think so, no. A gentleman's farm, so it also thought of as a hobby farm, but in the late 19th and early to mid 20th centuries, a lot of especially wealthy people had country estates. You'd, you know, have a mansion, but it had a farm around it. You might be raising your prized bulls. You might have tenants doing the farming, and it was just a nice bucolic view for you.
But it wasn't your primary occupation
no,
as a farmer.
Generally, no, generally, a lot of the gentlemen's farms on the North Shore, West Lake Forest, places like that were people who had companies downtown, meatpacking and those kinds of things. But on their country estate, there'd be a working farm. And so the reason we're having this conversation is that a former gentleman's farm in Lake Forest is going in a whole new direction. So this is a piece of property that from the time white settlers arrived in Lake County, from the 1840s, it has been a farm. Over 170 years, it's been a farm. First, a working farm, and then a gentleman's farm or hobby farm with a mansion on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's been since about the 1930s. But about 170 years as a farm, and it had been owned since the mid-50s by the same family.
Person, yeah.
The family of Robert Stewart, who was the CEO of Quaker for a long time and is one of the founders of the America First movement with Gerald Ford when they were Yale law students back in the 40s. Anyway, he owned the property from early 1950s until he died just a few years ago. His family has sold it, and now it's going. The new buyer is turning it all back to pre-settlement prairie.
Which, you know, when you think of restoration, you think of bringing things back to mid-20th century or 1800. They're going even further back. They're like, oh, yeah, farm's pretty original, but we're going all the way back.
We're wiping it out. Yeah, we're putting... So this is a... They're keeping the mansion, by the way.
Okay.
A couple of people... The mansion includes some of the original 1850s farmhouse, but was turned by Stanley Anderson, a great architect, was turned into a mansion in the 1930s. They're keeping that, restoring that, but all this farmland, it's about 24 acres of farmland, is going all the way back to prairie. This is a family who originally were from Lake Forest. They moved to Wisconsin and did this over the course of the past 30 years on about 80 acres. And as the new owner, Roger Kristoff, told me, they're now downsizing from 80 acres to 23.
Okay.
Yeah. Their kids are grown. But it's just this sort of momentous sort of turn. That may be exaggerating. It's a very big turn from 170 years of working the soil to turning it back to what it had been for centuries.
Which I imagine will take some time, obviously. It takes a few years to get prairies back up and going again. But I've been to some prairie restorations down in East Central Illinois, and man, it doesn't take long. Those plants, that once you get them there, they remember that that is the soil that they were meant to be in, and they spread pretty quickly. I mean, it's amazing to see how fast those restoration projects can go.
Yeah, I think so. And he has some expertise having done it on this other farm and having expert opinions helping him. But a lot of it is getting those plants in there and then giving them a chance. You've seen, you know, the images of the roots that go down twice the depth of the plants and that sort of thing. So eventually this becomes, I would imagine that at some point you wouldn't be able to tell whether it had ever been farmed.
Right, exactly.
Not in the next 5 years, but at some point it'll look like the 1830s again.
We couldn't get to all the stories of rich people buying big houses, but where can people find out more information about that, Dennis?
ChicagoBusiness.com.
Dennis, always, thanks for your time.
Thanks.